Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, Election Day, the 4th of November. A reminder to vote if you haven't done so already. And a reminder that tonight we will have election returns here on Wisconsin Public Radio starting at 8 o'clock. So tune in for all the results as they roll in. Get all the Wisconsin information and up-to-the-minute analysis on all of the races that are a part of this 2014 midterm election. This hour, we're going to talk about immigration, and we're going to talk about how some people are taking the issue of immigration into their own hands. Edgewood College is bringing two human rights activists who are working on the border to their college tomorrow evening, and they are with us this hour. A trial attorney who has attained not guilty verdicts for immigrants in state and federal courts. His name is Ray Ibarra Maldonado. He's also co-counsel in a federal civil rights lawsuit against the Maricopa County Sheriff, who has been very much in the news. Ray has co-written and co-produced the documentary Rights on the Line, Vigilantes at the Border, created and coordinated the Legal Observer Project during the Minutemen's operations, and has trained hundreds of volunteers and spent months following the Minutemen as they patrolled along the U.S.-Mexico border. He is the author of Born on the Border, Minutemen Vigilantes, Origins of Arizona's Anti-Immigrant Movement, and A Call for Increased Civil Disobedience. And Ray, thank you very much for being with us this afternoon. Hi.
Oh, thank you, Kathleen, for having us.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
Also joining us is Professor Angeles Maldonado, who's been closely involved in the immigrant rights movement in Arizona for the past 11 years. She was born in Mexico. Her family immigrated to Phoenix in 1988 in pursuit of realizing the American dream. Her dissertation was Raids, Race, and Resistance, Narratives and Discourse in the Immigration Movement in Arizona. She serves on the Community Advisory Board in the Ortega Melendres versus the Arpaio federal racial profiling case, and is a faculty associate at Arizona State University. And Angeles, thank you very much for being with us as well. Hi.
Hi, thank you so much.
This issue has moved a little bit out of the news lately, perhaps because nobody is focusing attention on it anymore. But can you both give us an update of what has happened to the huge numbers of unaccompanied children who made their way to the border a few months ago? Are they in detention somewhere? Have they been sent home? Have they been united with families? What is the story? Ray?
A little bit of everything from what we've been hearing so far. I know some people did have their hearings in a very rapid process that violated due process, and they were sent back to their countries of origin. You have some that were also released and are waiting their immigration court hearings where they have family members, and some that are still being held in detention centers. So while it's not in the media as much, there still is definitely a need for people to get involved and for attorneys to take on these cases on a pro bono basis.
Mm-hmm. I want to find out how both of you, because your stories are so fascinating and you did this a great sacrifice to yourselves. Angeles, why did you decide to become closely involved in the immigrant rights movement?
Sure. Well, I was born in Mexico in a small town near Mexico City. And my parents immigrated to the United States when I was 8 years old. And when we got here, we really experienced a lot of discrimination and racism. And I realized that the American dream was more of a nightmare, that there was a lot of discrimination. And I just wanted to do something about it. So I decided to get involved with different community organizations. I got a degree in justice studies. And really trying to understand, you know, what was behind some of those sentiments that we were experiencing.
And when you talk about discrimination against your family, what kind of discrimination?
It was mostly verbal. Like, I remember going to eat at a restaurant, for instance, and when my dad wouldn't pronounce things the right way, you know, his English wasn't very good, you know, people would make fun of him or treat him differently. And then also, you know, in the school setting, I had teachers that would say that people should go out to the border and shoot Mexicans. And so just being in a classroom where these things were talked about in that way really made me very uncomfortable and question my identity.
Ray, how about you?
Well, immigration and the border has always been something that's been of interest to me. I was born in this small town called Douglas, Arizona, and my mother was born on the Mexican side of that area in called a town called Agua Prieta, Sonora. And we were literally born a mile away from each other, but because she was born in Mexico, she was a Mexican citizen. Because I was born in the U.S., I was a U.S. citizen. So growing up, I knew family members that were deported, people who tried coming back across the border, and just seeing that as a child, really something that stuck with me. My grandparents were also very involved in organizing as far as working in the mines and maquiladoras back in the Douglas, Agua Prieta area. So social justice was something that's always, I think, sort of been in my blood. And just as I got older, the issue kept getting hotter and hotter, and more people were dying in the desert. And I said to myself, hey, might as well go to law school and see if I can do something about this.
You also have spent a great deal of time working on the vigilante issue, and you started doing that when you were in law school, didn't you?
I did, actually. I did my undergrad at Arizona State University, then I went into law school at Stanford. And when I first got there, I was just horribly lost. It was a place of great wealth and privilege, and here I was, this working-class kid that's lived paycheck to paycheck our entire lives, and had no idea really what I was walking into. And the first thing I wanted to do was just run away and run back home. My first summer, actually, I went back to Arizona, worked on the vigilante issue, and thankfully after that, I got a two-year fellowship through the ACLU to come back to the border and work on stopping the vigilantes. And that was something that really had a great impact even today on the work that I do.
Mm. Well, I was looking today through the internet on information about the current state of the Minutemen militia and encountered this news that the Minutemen militia are recruiting 3,500 volunteers to patrol the U.S. border. They're calling for this Operation Normandy to be waged on May 1st, 2015. A lot of people don't know very much about this Minutemen militia. Why were they formed? Who are these people, and what are they doing along the border?
So the vigilante issue predates the Minutemen Project. When I first went down and started working on the issue, it was more of a concern groups like Ranch Rescue, people like Roger Barnett, and the Minutemen weren't even around. But back in 2005, a gentleman by the name of Chris Simcox and James Gilchrist got together, and they said, hey, let's do this Minutemen Project, invite people to come down to the border and essentially hunt for people who are coming across. I kind of ignored it at first. I just said, don't worry about those guys. They're just looking for media attention. But unfortunately, what we found, and I started getting calls from the Southern Poverty Law Center, Anti-Defamation League, saying, look at what the white power websites are saying about this Minutemen Project. And they were just saying some horrific things about the need to go down to the border and finally start the revolution and bag and tag a Mexican, things that were just horrendous. So from that point is when I started focusing on the Minutemen Project and called for volunteers from across the country to come down and sit behind them with video cameras to make sure no violence has happened. Now, the Minutemen Project in the mid-2000s fell apart, ego-driven, just took them in different directions. One of the leaders is actually now inside of a jail in Maricopa County being charged with child molestation and set for trial, I think, sometime in December. But now you have this reincarnation where they try and do the same thing. I think they just went into the Tea Party, and now that immigration is becoming a hot issue again, they're trying to find another way to get back in the media, get some free press, and do some free, you know, public speaking gigs around the country. I don't think it'll amount to much. I think hopefully it'll just die out on its own. They're saying 3,500. I doubt they'll have 35 people.
Mm. Angeles, let me ask you about the motivation for people in Central America, in Mexico, to come to the United States, because your family wanted to come here to be a part of the American dream. I think that that's about part of the story that's lost here. When you look at these, and particularly the children who have been coming in large numbers to the United States, life must be really, really harsh for so many people to risk their lives in making that long journey to get here. Why? Why is America attractive?
Well, I mean, there are several reasons. Poverty is a huge one. And then also family reunification is another one. There's families that, you know, the father leaves and comes to the United States. And then, you know, later the children and the mom follow along. But also just globalization in general. There's push and pull factors, and there's many reasons, but I think you're right when you say that why would they leave. When I was little, I always questioned why we left. Well, you know, I loved my country. I loved being with my grandparents, being at home. And it was completely a culture shock to come into this other country where you were constantly getting messages that you weren't wanted here. But I think it's that you have to. It's not that it's really a choice, but that, you know, something else bigger is pushing you here.
Ray, what kind of policy should we have for people like Angeles' family who wanted to come here for a better life? I mean, what do we do? Should we open our doors to everyone?
Well, I'm an advocate for what I term human mobility. I don't like to talk about open borders because to me that's giving rights or focusing on an inanimate object, which is the border. I prefer to focus on the human beings. And I think as a human being, you should have a human right, or you do have a human right, to go wherever you want, to look for work, to support yourself and support your family. So even though I'm an attorney and I have to go to immigration court on a daily basis, what I really believe in my heart is that people have the human right to come across the border and search for work. And I think governments, nation states, need to recognize that that human rights supersedes their right as a nation state, and people should be allowed to come over here to look for work, to support themselves and their families.
Mm-hmm. And why is it that we have such an incredibly difficult time? It's not just this issue, it's many others, but where you apparently had some agreement among Republicans and Democrats that we needed to take a good long look at this, and we've had some Republicans wanting a more humane policy. We've had a lot of people saying they don't want to deal with this issue during election time. Why is it so hard for us to just sit down and figure out what is the right thing to do here?
I mean, that's a great question. That's the number one question, is why can't people whose job is to write the laws, to make sure we have just laws, figure out a way that people who want to come here, and quite frankly, for our society, people that we need to come here to work in these service industries, to do jobs that other folks don't want to do, how can we can't come up with a solution better than what we have today? And there's a lot of political infighting. There's a lot of people trying to get votes of those that are on the far right. And I think the need to say we're tough on the border, we're aggressive on the border, we're going to further militarize the border, is really taking us away from where we need to go, is to finding a solution to keep people here that are here and already feeling that they are a part of society, that this is their community. And in order to also let more people come in so that they can do the work that this country, quite frankly, needs, but also that they need to support themselves and their family.
Mm-hmm. Professor Angeles, what do you think? What's the reason for lack of taking on this issue?
Well, I think that there's still a lot of sentiments of, fear, the demographic changes, and really the issue of race. I think it's still, especially when you look at politics in Arizona, I think the fact that there's all these, minimum groups and all these anti-immigrant groups, and then the way that they organize and the actions that they take really surface some of the nativist sentiments of, trying to protect or preserve white supremacy, white privilege, and then just the perception of white injury, that there is, that the reason why things are tough, it's because of these immigrants. You know, they're targeted as the cause for why everything is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's the population that, the votes and that's in power are the ones that still have these feelings. I think that politicians spend a great deal of time just trying to appease, those groups.
Mm-hmm. Ray, what about a criminal element? Is it true that there are a lot of people who are running drugs and criminal elements who are a part of this move to the border, and we need to be worried about that?
Well, I mean, it's true to a certain extent. And part of the work that I do is I represent people who are charged with smuggling drugs, either backpacks of marijuana through the desert, or people who put methamphetamine or other drugs, serious drugs, in their vehicle and drive them across. So I'm not going to come up here and say, you know what, that's not happening on the border, because it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reality. You know, the reality is that people in the United States of America want to consume drugs, so that people who are poor living in the border area, when they're offered $400, $500 to do this, are going to do it. It's something that we need to be taking into consideration when we talk about immigration, but at the same time we need to understand why people are bringing drugs across, because there's a demand here. So if we want to solve that situation, we need to focus more on that, not just on these very poor people. And I can tell you story after story of my clients who are just really good, nice people, but are down on their luck, having a difficult life, and think, hey, I can make $400 if I do this. And now they're looking at 5 to 10 years in the federal penitentiary.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about the work that you're doing in immigration courts. Is most of it trying to reunite people with family members who are already in the country or to keep people from deportation, or what exactly is it?
We do at our office deportation defense and family-based immigration. The most high-profile cases are the deportation defense cases. Recently, we've taken on a couple of pro bono asylum cases for people that have actually already been deported and are trying to come back into the country. So we're trying to look for new and innovative legal theories that we can use to get people back with their families, because I truly believe, as an advocate, as a human rights activist, that people have the right to be with their families. People have the right to live in their communities without fear. And I make every attempt that I can to use the law to get those people back with their family members and back into their communities. It's not easy. You know, as an immigrants' rights attorney in Arizona, I probably lose a lot more often than I win. But it's a great battle, and it's a great struggle. There's a lot of really good people on the ground in Arizona, organizers and activists that put their hearts and souls into these campaigns. And to be a small part of it and to see the look on, you know, either a spouse's face or a parent's face or a significant other's face when they're with their loved one after months and months of detention and deportation, it's really, you know, one of the most gratifying feelings you can get as an attorney to see that happen.
We're going to welcome phone calls for our guests. They will be appearing tomorrow night at Edgewood College in Madison. They are human rights activists who have been working on the border for a number of years now. Ray Ibarra Maldona, a trial attorney. He is co-counsel in a federal civil rights case. He is the co-producer and writer of the documentary Rights on the Line, Vigilantes at the Border. He created and coordinated the Legal Observer Project during the Minutemen's operations. And he's author of Born on the Border. Also joining us is Professor Angeles Maldonado. She's married. The two of them are married. And she's been involved in the immigrant rights movement in Arizona for a number of years. She serves on the Community Advisory Board in the Ortega Melendres versus Arpaio. I can never remember how to pronounce. Is it Arpaio? Arpaio, federal racial profiling case. We'll have to talk about that in a moment. He's the infamous sheriff. She's a faculty associate at Arizona State University. So what do you think of this idea of human mobility that Ray outlined to be recognized as a human right? Does that make sense to you or not? Why do you think that nobody will take action on this issue, even though it's crying out for some kind of action on a human level and on a political level as well? We welcome your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Today is election day. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, we will be analyzing on our program Whatever Happened Today with Craig Gilbert, who's the best in the business when it comes to analyzing what happens in Wisconsin elections. Joan Walsh will join us, who's a pretty strong progressive Democrat, and John McCormick, who's a pretty strong conservative, will be with us to analyze what we did today. And tonight, our election coverage on WPR, starting at 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's welcome phone calls for our guests. 800-486-8655 is the number. And I told you they would be at Edgewood. Let me just tell you, it's tomorrow at 6:30 in the evening at the Anderson Auditorium. It should be a very interesting presentation, Edgewood College. It's free to the public. There will be a reception and a book signing following the event. Let's go to calls, starting with David in Wanakee. Hi, David.
Hi. One of your guests made a comment you hear a lot in this issue, which is that they come here to take jobs that Americans won't do. And I'm in the construction industry, and I see it all the time, especially in roofing and in drywalling, where they'll come in, you know, a contractor will get some illegal immigrants, put them on a job site, pay them under the table $100 to work, you know, a 10, 12-hour day, which is half to a third of what, you know, one of the regular contractors would pay his people, no benefits. And you just can't compete with that. And it's really wiped out those two industries as far as wages and benefits. And until we can address how they can come here and work without driving that, you know, dark money under the table economy of depressing wages so low that you can't have a living wage in that industry anymore. Until we can address that, that's why there's so much pushback and nobody wants to go near this.
Thank you, David, for your call. Ray?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is something to say about people who come across. I have plenty of clients that do the construction, some really great framers. And to tell you the truth, we just bought a house the other day, and we might not have been able to afford it if it wasn't for the fact that immigrants are coming over and engaging in the construction jobs, and now that makes houses more affordable for everybody else. You know, the fact that it's driving other people out of the industry, I don't know. I haven't seen any research that supports that, but if it does, well, then they can go work in another industry and try to make a better living there. Just because capitalism is what we have in the United States of America, it isn't a reason why I don't think people should be able to come across and engage in work to support themselves and their families.
And is there a better way to do it that would make David feel that it was fairer to all if people were not being paid under the table for jobs, a worker kind of program? Would that be fairer?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think anybody really wants to work under the table. I think people would prefer to have a work permit. People would prefer to figure out a way that they could do everything on the straight and narrow if the government would provide that. And if the government did provide that, perhaps you would see more organizing in those industries. And this is not to say that doesn't happen already. There's a strong roofer organization in Phoenix that does a lot of organizing on the job sites. But I think having legal authorization to work would help improve and raise the wages for folks in those industries.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about, I can for the life of me not figure out how to say his name correctly, but the infamous sheriff, you're involved, Angeles, in the federal racial profiling case concerning this sheriff. What's this? How do you pronounce his name?
Arpaio.
It is Arpaio. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about him and about the case.
Yeah. Well, I think Sheriff Arpaio is really a symbolic figure. He's a charismatic leader who has really done a successful job of capitalizing on the sentiments of fear that I was speaking about. And what he has done is he has shown pretty much the entire country how he can force immigration at a local level. You know, he does a lot of press conferences, and a lot of his immigration enforcement takes on a very public spectacle where he brings in, you know, tons of sheriff deputies, horses, you know, cameras, and everything to try to show that he's doing something about immigration. And he's usually goes into Latino populated neighborhoods and arrests and deports people just for broken taillights or something small. So when he was doing this, he actually was found to be racially profiling Latinos in Maricopa County. And so this lawsuit has found him, you know, guilty of racial profiling. So now I'm sitting on that community advisory board that is kind of overseeing the reforms that have to take place.
And what should those reforms be, Ray?
Oh, well, I think the only way to reform Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio is to get him out of office. This guy is just over the top insane when it comes to going after people simply so he can get more media attention. The things that he's done as far as the pink underwear, the bologna sandwiches, I mean, they've gotten national attention for the last 20 years. And now here he is taking on this immigration issue. He's been conducting worksite raids in addition to the community raids that he's been doing, tearing apart families, you know, leaving little kids in tears when their mom and dad don't come home from an honest day's work. And it's just insane. And what he needs to do is step aside and realize that we're living in a different society now. And it's time to start moving forward and put people like Sheriff Arpaio in the past.
Let's go to John in Milwaukee next. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you going?
All right, John, how are you?
All right. You know, the thing about the immigration is I think people should come here, but this is a state. We are so unemployment. There's not enough work for people to come in. I mean, we've been a melting pot for so many years, and there's so many people coming into the United States from other countries. that we're already running out of job, that there's more other people, and then I don't mean to say it, but white people don't get hired as often as you may think. I mean, most applications require you to speak two languages.
For what kind of work?
Factory work, grocery store work, all kinds of offices, banks. The second language is almost a requirement, even for management positions. And it's nothing personal, but there's not enough work, and there's not enough people. There's so many people who are unemployed right now that they can't get jobs.
Right. What do you say about that?
Yeah. Well, I think the fact that if we are moving to a multilingual society is not a bad thing. I think as we globalization increases, we should be encouraging people to speak more than one language. I haven't applied for a job in a while, so I don't know if...
No, I haven't heard of that you have to be bilingual. I don't think that many jobs are like that.
Yeah, I mean, but what I'm saying is if that was the truth, it's not necessarily a bad
thing.
Right, we need to be going in that direction.
Right.
But the fact is that I really don't see right now, and also the discourse around we don't have enough jobs or they're taking all of our jobs. We need to realize immigration is not just... You know, there's not 10,000 jobs in Wisconsin, and once those jobs are taken, there are no more jobs. As people come into the community, as people come into the society, they earn a wage, and they also spend that money, so they create more jobs. There's not a pie, and once that pie is gone, then there's no more jobs. The pie expands as more people come into the economy, which creates other jobs. So we need to rethink how we evaluate immigration and how we discuss immigration when we're talking about the economy.
Yeah.
Yes, Angeles.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I just wanted to add that I think, what Ray was saying about, I think that a lot of times we simplify the issue of immigration so much, and I think the media plays a big role in doing that as well. When they talk about immigration in the media, it's always like, you know, the good guys or the versus the bad guys, and immigrants tend to fill that role of the bad guys, and I think it's more complicated than that. And so I'm not saying that we have the answers, but I think part of it is just really interrogating the messages that we receive in the media about immigration and trying to see, you know, the different contexts and how in some situations, you know, things are not exactly the way they're presented.
Yeah. Well, people tend to forget also, and it's a big part of what America is, except for the Native Americans. We all come from immigrants, you know. They all came from wherever they came from to populate this country. It's what, at the risk of being terribly simple here, but it is what makes America the country that it is.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a tendency of once we get here and we're comfortable, now let's close the door and not let anybody else in. But when you look back at your roots, and as you said it, unless you're 100% Native American, you have someone that came across to this country to find a better life. And that's all people are doing nowadays. So at what point do we shut the door and say, you know what, you're not as privileged or not as much a human as my family was, so now you can no longer come in. I think we need to find a way to have more compassion and humanity when we talk about immigration from a moral perspective and not just from a policy perspective.
Thanks for the call, John. Kim in Pleasant Prairie. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling for a couple of reasons. I used to teach public school, middle school level in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. And Sheboygan is kind of known in Wisconsin as a very unwelcoming community of 50,000 people. And this is only to explain it a little more in depth. I look like the great majority of people there. I'm from, you know, my heritage is Northern European. However, I did not have the right last name. And so I, too, was not welcomed. But nothing like what my students experienced, who were Latinos, African Americans, and Hmong. And, of course, there are not a lot of any of those ethnic groups in Sheboygan because it's very unwelcoming. So I'm offering, first of all, to Angeles her story of how, as a little girl, she was so terribly treated by teachers and her family, by those in Arizona. I apologize on behalf of them. But the second thing I'd like to say is quite a lot of Midwesterners go to Arizona for the winter. And I think as a general statement about the Midwest, because the trends from the two coasts do not get here for 2, 3, 4 years, this particular area of the country has a hard time adjusting to new trends, and even if they're old trends, whatever they are, it takes a long time. And they also see some of the backlash that goes on the coast. And I'm not excusing it at all. I think it's terrible. I think it's not good at all that our government has not addressed this. And it's quite shameful. I work quite a lot with internationals, with refugees and immigrants, and I'm appalled at how we treat newcomers to our country, no matter how they come. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for the call. Angeles.
Oh, thank you so much for that feedback. I really appreciate it, your words.
Ray, do you want to respond?
No.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kim, for the call. Jason in Marshfield, hi.
Yes, hello. I think in listening to your discussion, there's quite some important considerations that I don't hear being addressed. One of your guests talked about, you know, instead of using open borders, he talked about human mobility. And, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense, quite convincing. But where's the discussion on the systems, American systems, our retirement system, our education system, our health care system, our legal system, our unemployment system? These are all areas of the country that, you know, how are we going to absorb large amounts of people who are not here legally? For example, you know, the health care system, you know, Obamacare, we spent, what, $2 trillion to bring 30 million people into the health care system? If we're talking about amnesty or citizenship for another 10 million, who's going to pay for that? And if you go to the Department of Justice website, you'll find that a large percentage of the federal inmates incarcerated are illegal. And again, the source is the Department of Justice website. Thank you.
Well, I think that a lot of these people are already here. So I think the idea that if we allow people in, that there's going to be a lot of people coming in. I mean, I think the fact that I think what's being ignored is the fact that there's a lot of immigrants already in this country that are already absorbed and are part of the fabric of the society, and they're already involved in living and being exploited and I don't know.
Right? Yeah, I mean, if you have an immigrant come over who's 20 years old, and automatically they start working. A lot of immigrants put money into Social Security. There's this common thought that, oh, they don't pay any taxes at all. They don't put any money in anywhere. But I remember an old quote from Alan Greenspan that basically said that Social Security would not survive if it wasn't for the undocumented immigrants that were putting in money that they're never going to see. They're never going to receive that money. And also, someone that comes over in their early 20s is not a burden on our society because we never have to pay for their schooling, right? Our children is what we put a lot of money or need to put more money into. But someone who comes over already willing to work, they're not as much of a burden as is a newborn baby who's just born and has to be supported the whole time up until they can get to working age. So again, we're completely missing the boat when we talk about immigration and the economy. People are here working, they're paying taxes. Every time that they buy something, they pay taxes. They're already putting into the system. They're not here looking for a handout. They're not here looking to live off the government or get any free laptops or any crazy ideas like that. They're here to work, and that's what they want to do. We should figure out a way that they can be able to do that lawfully without having to live in fear of being deported. Now, I do agree with the caller that the number one federal crime that's now prosecuted is these illegal reentries or illegal entries, and undocumented immigrants are far more overrepresented in the federal penitentiary system than are other groups. And I think that's sad. It's appalling that the United States government is choosing to enforce these laws that are on the books as opposed to other laws. Instead of going after, you know, big banks who are destroying our economy, they're going after this poor immigrant who's coming across to be back with their family. So that fact is a reality, but that fact makes me saddened at my core. You know, I do these illegal reentry cases often, and to sit across from somebody who's being treated like an animal and that's living in a cage all because they wanted to come back to be with their family is appalling and something that I think we'll look back on in the future and really be embarrassed about how we treated people who are simply trying to come back here.
Tell me about the part of your book, Ray, that deals with the many trips that you've made to the interior of Mexico to search for victims of vigilante violence. Not easy to talk about, I'm sure, but I don't think many people know about this.
Yeah, I mean, that's something when I first went back down to Douglas, I did public records and FOIA requests to get information on vigilante abuse. I got documents, I mean, pages after pages, box loads of incidents of individuals coming across the border who were punched, who were kicked, who were pointed at with weapons, and really being mistreated, but not a single prosecution. But in those documents were the addresses of people in Mexico. So what I did is I was able to make a connection down in the interior of Mexico in Michoacan with a priest down there. He said, hey, come on down. I'll take you door to door. We'll go look for these people. So we did that. And the first, you know, first few houses, it wasn't any fun because nobody lived there or the addresses weren't even real. But we eventually found people in far off places like Rancho Escondido, Municipio de Mirabatío, Michoacan, just by knocking on doors and saying, do you know this person? Do you know this person? And after, I think, three different trips down there, a period of about 6 months, we signed up 17 people for a lawsuit against one of the vigilantes, Roger Barnett. MALDEF, Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund, filed that lawsuit. And the jury down in Tucson found Mr. Barnett guilty, ordered him to pay, I think it was about $80,000. And it was a really successful case, and it was a great privilege for me to be able to go down there to Mexico, knock on doors, and start organizing with people who were passionate about telling their stories and passionate about wanting to make sure that this kind of violence didn't happen to someone right. else who was going to cross the border.
Yeah. Let's go to Carla in La Crosse. Hi, Carla.
Hello. I'm calling because there's been talk about immigrants coming and taking jobs. Well, immigrants cannot come over and take a job. They have to be offered a job. So what's being done to pursue employers that are actually employing? I doubt if people would come over here if they didn't have a job. And it's the employers that are lowering the wages for them, taking advantage of them, and lowering the wages for other people. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Carla.
There's the federal laws that make it a crime to work without the proper authorization or use false documents to find work. The federal government, at least in Arizona, is not enforcing those laws a great deal. And I don't know the reasoning why that, but what's happening in Maricopa County is that the sheriff is trying to enforce the laws, but on the employee side. They're not going after the employer at all. But from my personal perspective, I mean, if you're a business owner, you should be able to hire whoever you want to hire. You know, the federal government, for me, or even the state government, the less government we have, the better. And if you want to create your own business, you should be free to hire whoever you want to hire without the fear of Uncle Sam coming down on you and saying, no, you can't hire that person. I'm not a fan of the camp that says go after the employers. Employers, you want to create jobs, you want to give people jobs, do it.
Let's go back to you, Angeles, for a moment. You talked about missing your grandparents and loving the place where you were born. Another thing that has been factoring into the whole conversation recently with children coming to the border is, what is it we can do as Americans or as members of countries in Central and South America to make our countries safer and have jobs more readily accessible? Is that a part of this whole equation at all for people to want to stay where they grew up?
You mean if there was jobs in Mexico, if people would want to stay there?
Jobs and safety. I mean, she would be working for that.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Jobs and safety, too. We hear about, you know, gangs and how much violence there is. Not that there is not a lot of violence in the United States, certainly, too.
Oh, safety.
But,
okay.
Yeah, and safety. I mean, should it be part of our whole talk about immigration to find ways to provide jobs for people in the areas where they don't have them that's making them think of America as the place to go?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would definitely help, you know. There's a lot of people that migrate here. They migrate with the intention of eventually going back. I remember we used to have suitcases where we would fill up with, you know, different things that we were going to take back. But
eventually
we never left. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's one thing that a lot of they probably wouldn't call themselves anti-immigrant or just people who aren't in support of people coming across to work don't realize. If it was easier for people to come and go from Mexico or from Central America, you would see less people settle here. I guarantee you that. You would see people come here to work for a short amount of time, or, you know, 6 months, 9 months, go back, and then come back again the next year. But what we have now with this almost impenetrable wall along the U.S.-Mexico border is people being forced to stay in the country, because if you go back, your chances of returning are very, very little. So the more easier it is for people to come in and out, the more people actually will not stay and choose to bring their whole family to the United States.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. Our guests are going to be appearing tomorrow evening, and it should be such an interesting, as you can tell from listening to them, conversation and presentation of information. Voices from the Border is the name of the symposium tomorrow, and it features our guests this hour, Ray Ibarra Maldonado and Dr. Angeles Maldonado. Ray is the author of Born on the Border, an immigration lawyer. Dr. Angeles Maldonado is an Arizona State University associate faculty member and community advocate in educational leadership and policy studies. They'll be tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. at Anderson Auditorium, Edgewood College, in Madison, free to the public, and there will be a reception and book signing to follow. Here's how you reach us. One line open. You know, you can send us a message if you want to, if the phones are getting problematic, they're too busy for you. But the number to take that one line that's open is 800-486-8655. Or you can send an email, and that's talk@wpr.org. Or you can send a message on Facebook. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Like us while you're there, and you can hear about upcoming shows then. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Join us tomorrow as we continue our coverage of elections. You can get a full recap of the election tomorrow on the Joy Cardine Show from 6 to 8 in the morning tomorrow at 1 o'clock. We'll be devoting our 1 o'clock to the elections as well. Craig Gilbert will join us, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Joan Walsh will join us from Salon and MSNBC, and also, John McCormick will be joining us, and they've all been with us before, and they're good guests, and two of them are partisan, and that'll make it interesting. John is senior writer for the Weekly Standard, so that's coming up tomorrow, hour one. We have time for more phone calls. Jesus in Walworth County. Hi, Jesus.
Hello, how are you doing today?
Good.
Number one, I am an immigrant. I'm a U.S. citizen now. I had the pleasure of teaching in one of the high schools in this area. And one of the things that I was great to do is try to help understand what true nationalism is. And nationalism is that you are very happy and content with whom you are and what is your background. When we try to teach those things to the persons and they comprehend it, they understand that being prideful, it's bad. You have to be very happy and content with whom you are in order to understand somebody else's background. And when you do that and you actually get the point across, you can have everybody on the same room agreeing in one thing, that the respect for somebody else's rights is the peace. When you get that together, then everybody will be unified. It is good to be Anglo-Saxon. It is good to be Spaniard. It's good to be Italian. It's good to be Mexican. It's good to be everywhere you come from. And if you share, you learn to share into your background, the positive things are your background, everything changes. And that's something that I try to do in the school that I was. When I saw the issues of discrimination and affecting grades and affecting personalities, once I was able to get into the students that message, and they comprehended, out of 200 students, we had 180 that had success. They changed the way things were worked in. Even teachers were surprised of the change of attitude. And so when you correct those things and you're able to get that point across, everything functions better. Discrimination ends. So I think that's very important to do throughout the country and everywhere else, that discrimination is an issue.
Mm-hmm. Ray, you want to take that?
Yeah, Jesus gave me goosebumps over there, man. What great work. That's awesome. I'm going to recruit you to get back with me in Arizona and go do the same thing over there. But I think you make a really great point. It's that we don't just need immigration reform. We don't just need presidential action. although I do advocate for that. But what we do need is one-on-one conversations. We do need to change the way that we think and act. And that can start in your homes with your own children and, as Jesus pointed out, in the schools, because we really are living in a new society. We're getting people from all over the world that are going to be here. And the more we have those conversations and the more everybody respects where they come from, the more they can respect others. So great work, Jesus.
And let's go to Francisco, who I think is in Wisconsin, but is from Mexico. Francisco, hi.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, everybody. Just wanted to call and say that, you know, as you mentioned, I'm from Mexico. I came to the country 18 years ago, not knowing the language and not really knowing the culture. But I have been incredibly fortunate to have found just amazing and incredible people that were always welcoming and made me feel great of being here. Just last week, I became a U.S. citizen, and I was able to vote today. So today was my first day as a voter citizen, and I'm extremely proud of that.
And what brought you here, Francisco? Was it work? Was it school?
It was work. It was also just an adventure. I thought I would come in to the country, make some money, and go back to my country. But then I met my wife. We got married, had children, and, you know, we've been married for the last 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
I do know a lot of people that have come from different countries, mainly from South America, who tell me their stories and how many hurdles they have to overcome to just get to the country and how much money they have to pay. They really put their lives at risk in order to come here. And I do know that a lot of people don't really understand the severity of things that happen in the border, too, in order for people to come here.
Well, it's been quite a day for you, Francisco. Thank you for calling. Angeles?
No, I just appreciate the calls and just hearing the different stories. I think one thing that we need to keep in mind is that regardless of how we feel, you know, philosophically about immigration, that it is a reality and it is a part of American culture. So whether we, you know, we choose to accept it or not, it is something that's taking place every day, and that. And I think it's important to try to embrace some of these changes that are already here when we're thinking about immigration and not thinking about should they be here, but rather, you know, they are here and how do we work around it, you know?
Yeah, and I think what the caller mentioned about a lot of people not understanding how difficult it is to get across the U.S.-Mexico border is definitely very, very true. We've seen over 4,000 people that have died trying to cross the U.S.-Mexico border. 4,000. You
terrible.
Never see that in the media. In addition to that, you know, the amount of suffering that one must endure to walk 4 days in 100-plus degree weather in Arizona to get over here to this country is just unbelievable. I've seen many people in the desert near death. It's heartbreaking. It's happening on a daily basis, and we need to figure out a way to make the suffering and pain stop.
Mm. Thank you both so much for being with us. It was just such a good hour, and it was really nice to meet, at least over the air, both of you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having us. And anytime you want to come down to Arizona, we'd love to have you.
Thank you. All right, you're on. Not sure I want to go to Arizona, but, well, maybe so someday. And our guest will be tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m. at the Edgewood College Anderson Auditorium. It should be a really interesting talk. Voices from the Border, Lessons of Fear and Resistance from Arizona, featuring Ray Ibarra Maldonado and Dr. Angeles Maldonado. And he is the author of Born on the Border. He's an immigration lawyer, been doing work in this area for a long time. And Dr. Angeles is teaching at Arizona State University. And we thank them both for their graciousness and knowledge of an issue that we don't hear that much about, this side of the issue. Well, thank you, KP Whaley, for doing on-air production, and Judith Sears-Poisson for producing this interesting program. We'll be with you again tomorrow. Election results, the first hour of the program. The second hour of our program tomorrow, we'll be talking about Ebola and the quarantines that are being put in place by some governors in the country. Are they necessary? Are they political? Are they going to cause more cases of the disease than they're meant to prevent? Our guest from the Center for Medical Progress tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Happy Election Day. Talk to you tomorrow. Have a really good evening. Thanks for listening.